Tibet colleges. The question we had about specifically the pension liability, so I can get good clarity in terms of what that is. Now, in terms of that, the question was, if those lecturers or Tibet staff were part of the provinces, that the provinces paid the GPF. Now, let's clarify that. The pension liability arose specifically on staff that worked in the colleges, but who received top-up payments from the college payroll. So what it means is, if you recall, when they worked under the provinces, there was a moratorium placed on PASHA. So if you had staff members that received pay progression or an increase in salary, it had to be paid through the college council payroll, not through PASHA. What that then means is that they would have received two salaries, right? The one on PASHA, but then one from the college. But the one from the college, obviously, that's where the split had to happen. See, if they paid the staff member, a portion had to go to GEPF. See, on that level. And in some cases, that didn't happen. Therefore, the cash that they were paid were received by the staff member. They deducted tax, but they didn't pay GEPF. Now, with function shift and the migration, you now have to ensure that you then take into account that top-up salaries on the PASHA. But now there's a problem, because GEPF was never paid that portion. And that's where the liability now comes from. If you increase someone's salary on PASHA today, you give them a higher salary level. You have to buy back those pensionable years, which you never contributed pension. That's a pension liability. So we cannot migrate people directly today onto PASHA at the high level. There's a pension liability. If you increase people and they retire, you pay them at a higher level on the salary. And that's a defined benefit plan in terms of GPF. Therefore, we are liable about 130 million rand in terms of that 500 staff. But as indicated by the CFO, we are earmarking, hopefully, that outer allocation of the 5 billion to be able to subsidize that payment. So we've looked at the option. Either you're going to recuperate the staff debt, that means we pay GPF, and we have to then create debt for our 500 members and then, you know, deduct it from the salaries monthly. And that's going to be a huge administration burden, as well as Treasury indicated that's not maybe the best way to go. So I have to clarify, so that's where the pension liability came from, and it's directly at the impact of function shift. I hope that clarifies now the whole pension liability question.
I was in a position like that, and my understanding was that those allowances that people received was a non-pensionable acting allowance between them and the College Council. And I would urge you to also take a little bit of impact you have already. I would love my former colleagues to have that there, because it was a wrong.
Thank you. I think we'll take that recommendation to pursue. I don't have the direct answer if that legal opinion has been received, but our information was that even from Labour side, they would like the higher notch. So
I appreciate it. Doesn't mean acting allowed.
No. It was not an acting allowed. It was, and in terms of that portion, DG is correct. If they had received higher salaries, they had a pay progression in the past, the pay progression could not be paid by the province. Therefore, it was pensionable salary. It was definitely not an acting allowance. All of the benefits were paid in through the College Council. So that gives you a legal right to, and that's why HR is here as well. So I don't think that the legal right here is it's a correct salary. But there's a pension liability attracted to that because it's a defined benefit.
I think HR wanted to say something.
Part of the salary, like some of them were promoted going through the normal recruitment and selection processes, but that promotion was never effected on PESAR. So if you were on salary level 7 and promoted to salary level 8, the basic education did not promote them to level 8. As a result, the college took a decision to say the difference between salary level 7 and 8 will be paid through the college payroll. That is where the liability arises from. So it is pensionable salary.
Correct. Okay. We can only ask for caution in this area because we saw what it looks like at the university in KZN. It's the same problem. We can only give caution in this area. We can also caution you on the translator issue. We must be cautious in this area. In any case, let's proceed quickly.
Thank you, Chair. The one question that was asked specifically for TVET was the question we received there that we spent the money, we haven't achieved the targets. In terms of that, those targets, the 12, the 1 out of 12 that we achieved are system-related targets. Now, if you said we spend the funds, I want to give clarity on what funds means. Funds means money that we receive from the fiscus to pay for salary and some components of goods and services, and I'm referring to operational budgets of the department to enable us to do our work, which includes travel costs and accommodation costs. Now, again, if you look at your system targets as an example, it's not a direct correlation to say that this item is funded through the fiscus. I need to explain to you your question. Therefore, a lot of these things are not directly linked to a budget. You can still achieve that without having it directly cost. I hope that clarifies the question. I can give you some examples if you'd like. If you look at some of the system targets, I just want to open it up quickly. As an example, TVET throughput rate, just as an example, we had a 50% target. So again, it's a system output target. We can't say from our operational budget, this is the amount allocated. I just wanted to clarify that. You asked, where will the money come from to attain these targets? So you can't directly, connect a lot of your budget directly. So I just wanted to clarify that. I think the point is more that your system outputs indicates to you where are you sitting, and I think that is a strategic view about the system. And we must align our efforts to make sure that we get the system where it's supposed to go. I wanted to just give clarity that it's not directly linked to a costed budget per item. And just back to the TVET colleges, emanating from what the AG's presentation was yesterday, I think it was clear. There was indications of, progression in the audit outcomes. But what I'd like to tell the portfolio committee is if you look at the AG presentation yesterday, it's evident that new audits taken over by the AG. You saw yesterday in the graph there was a regression. And please note that that happened on all of them. And the AG is here and I can confess to that. It's because the AG is turning every stone, looking for all the things, and I think that's a very good thing. If you look at the private sector auditors in the past, and I don't want to mention a lot of names from private sector companies. But the point I'm making is I think by adding the AG to this process really gives credibility to the process. We are expecting a decrease because they're showing us all the errors. Then we take that into audit action plans and we're driving that very hard with the cycle CFO in each of the colleges. You then develop those audit action plans and you make sure that you increase your effectiveness and internal control. Now you've noted some of the audits that were audited over the last 2 years as an example indicated an increase in efficiency. So I think the next set of audits will even look better because we've got all 50 on the being audited now by the AG. So I'm expecting, and the partner is expecting definitely also an improvement in audit outcomes going forward. So just wanted to highlight that from the AG's report yesterday. Thank you.
I think the answer's not finished because I think there was an additional one also on but why does the legality about the Auditor General overlooking the colleges, the universities?
I think
you promised to answer today.
The question I wanted to respond to has got to do with whether or not Umalus has released the new qualification on the NSIP. Yep. The question I'm trying to respond to is whether or not Umalus has released the draft qualification policy for the NCB, which we may then, on the basis of which we may determine admission requirement. The answer is yes, it is available and it's just ready for processing so that we give it to the minister to publish in the government gazette. But the policy has been developed, the new NCB policy which we have been revising.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, thank you very much. There were a number of questions relating to the audit. The first one, the Honourable Member, was this the toughest audit report that we've had? No, it was not the toughest audit report that we've had. Last year was a bit tougher, I would say. This year we have an unqualified audit, and what is very important is that we also did not have any material adjustments to the financial statement, because that is a good indication of the improvement of the financial management process. They've increased the capacity in finance, and you could see differently. And that was, for me, very positive, that you don't have to go and adjust based on the Auditor General's findings. It was that was tough.
The CFO is protected by the chair.
Thank you. So, in terms of that, we've seen an improvement. If you look at the action plan that we've indicated here, it might indicate. I think we might should have worded this a little different. It might have indicated that we've got a number of extra findings. Honourable Members, with the findings we had, what management has done is to do a more in-depth analysis of the root causes. So there are more actions for certain findings because, as you've indicated, Honourable Member, some of them were not effective last year. So they had to look into this in more detail. Management has drawn up an action plan now with more in-depth actions to address all the root causes. We will monitor this from the Audit Committee side. We will receive this plan, the final plan, very soon now in October, but what I would like to see as the Audit Committee Chair is that there's agreement between management and the Auditor General that whatever management says we'll put in place will address the root cause. So we will interact with the Auditor General in that regard. To give you an example, I see Mr. Dehaan is here, he's acting as the BE. At Basic Education, they're actually having a full-day workshop with management after management has completed this plan to address all the actions and say, we think this will work or this won't work. It's not taking away management responsibilities at all, but I think that is a value add. So we will only receive this at the Audit Committee once I'm comfortable that management and the Auditor General is in agreement. In terms of the findings, Honourable Members, we still have the remnants of the function shift, as you've indicated. The department has been stretched. We've seen additional capacity, but we've seen some repeat findings in HR. There's about 30 of them, smaller issues that we need to still address. We were not happy with everything. Some of these were small items that should have been addressed, like a senior manager not signing a performance agreement. I've just informally discussed with the chief director, just stop the salary because that's a part of your agreement. And you will see how quickly people sign if they don't get a salary on the 25th. So we will need to implement these things. And in terms of the irregular expenditure, Honourable Members, there was the question on that. If you go and look at the reasons for this, in a number of cases, it was clearly a lack of planning. And then they went out, and this puts the Director General in a very difficult position. And I think he has put his foot down now, DG, to say that he will not approve any deviations anymore. And unfortunately, the biggest part of that, more than half, is a single transaction which could have gone both ways. It was the appointment of a travel agent, where number two was selected because the quality looked better than number one. So, but the AG didn't agree. We had a long discussion on that. The AG didn't agree in the end. So that was something that I could understand, and Treasury is also happy after the investigation, etc. With the others, there will be investigation into this, into each of these cases. We've got a central investigations register that we will now monitor from the audit committee side as well. And then the performance information issues from an audit perspective. We've heard the DG, and we've heard from, especially from TVEC. We know the impact that a stable system like HIMA's had, and we've heard we don't have that same stable system for TVEC colleges. So a lot of work has gone into this. Honourable members, it's not that we just took the figures from the MIS and we couldn't rely on them. They've sent teams to every college. They've done samples. They've really tried this year to make sure that we have. Unfortunately, that was not enough for the AG to place reliance on it. This problem might still be with us for some time until we have a system in place. And the same with skills. Personally, I thought that maybe the APP target should rather be we will have a system in place before we say we will have 5,000 people going through the system, because how do you measure that? So that is something I think that the department will definitely look at. So with TVEC, honourable members, they're really working hard, and I know there's some additional plans that we have for this year that might assist on this, but it is not something that I'm comfortable as chair that it will disappear overnight. It is part of what we've inherited. I think that answers the questions that I've noted on the audit.
Oh, okay. Yeah, in terms of HR, there were a few issues that were raised. I think when I was doing my presentation, actually, I touched part of them in terms of the issues, I mean, the plans that we are currently working on. In terms of the disciplinary cases, it's true that we were not doing well. We only achieved 22% of the target. But basically, if I was to take the situation back, when migration happened, the regional offices in terms of support did not receive anything. So it was only part of the colleges that were migrated, and at the regional level, there was no capacity at all. And now, we have recently, like I indicated earlier, that we've actually managed to increase capacity at the college. Some of the officials assumed duty last month, and some will be assuming duty this quarter of the financial year. And we are hoping that there will be improvement in terms of that. And we also have a signed improvement plan in terms of how we're going to be training the chairpersons and having a pool of initiators to deal with the cases. And what I must also mention is that these cases are all at the college level. And I'm hoping that will improve. But we may still be having similar challenges on the first and the second quarter, but moving forward, we are hoping to improve on that. In terms of recruitment and selection, as I was presenting, I indicated that in the prior year, 2015-16, the target, the achievement was at 222 days. And you are correct, we've engaged service provider. Even though the appointment or the service provider did not yield positive outcome in terms of achieving the target, but we moved from 221 to 186, which means that we exceeded by only 6 days. It's still not working because even right now we're still utilizing service provider to assist us in capturing. But we are working together with SmartGov to introduce electronic e-recruitment system, which we are hoping to implement by 1st April 2018. We've already started interaction with them, and we presented how we want the system to assist us. Because basically, majority of time is taken during the receiving and sifting and doing all those applications. So the system will actually help us in terms of doing the sifting, and we only come in terms of doing the actual shortlisting. We have also lowered the delegations, and we are hoping that this will actually assist us in terms of improving the target. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. No, in respect to senior managers having signed, submitted performance agreements, I think 71 of them that we picked up in the 15, and that matter has been thoroughly investigated, and 38 of them were found really to have transgressed. So they are facing disciplinary inquiry now. I hope they don't run to the portfolio committee to claim that they are being victimized.
It's related to it. Yeah. Thank you, DG and honorable members. I just wanted to indicate in an attempt to respond to the issue of the accuracy of the data. Sometimes it's important for us to contextualize. I come from the exam environment. We're running 30 exams. It's a strain on anyone who's supporting us, including it. And it's not just those exams. You've got remark, you've got irregularity. So we try our best. If you look at certification data, we try to claim it. And we're working closely in a war room organized by the PET, with Umalusi, with the DHT system administrator. Information must be accurate from Umalusi, from CETA, and from us. So we need to collaborate. So we are working, we've cleaned the certification. I think we're going to work hard to clean the other data.
On irregularities and the what?
honorable members, I think what we'll do is we'll submit to you a detailed report on irregular expenditure with all the relevant information. To go into each and every case might take very long. I have the information with me, but I don't think it will be helpful to give all the data now. Just the other matter was on 30-day payments. We do have thorough system in place. The average time that we take to pay is 29 days. There are, however, still a few cases where we exceeded the 30-day payment limit. Those are reported on a monthly basis, and all the reasons for those are recorded on the system at this point in time. Many of the reasons are that by the time we process a payment, that the banking details of service providers are incorrect. Now, we get those banking details from the system that Treasury currently runs, the centralized database of all service providers. And what does happen is, unfortunately, in some cases, some service providers change their banking details without updating the system. So by the time we make the payment, obviously the payment is rejected, and we then have to go back to the service provider, get new banking details, load that with Treasury and with the Reserve Bank, because the Reserve Bank does not allow the payment to go through unless they certify the banking details. And that is what happens in many cases and takes a long time to happen. There are also other problems where invoices reach us extremely late. There's sometimes also volumes of invoices, such as with some of the service providers like Skynet, where we receive literally hundreds of invoices per month. And it just takes so much time to verify all that information, to sign off on all those invoices, and in some cases you exceed the 30-day period. But all those reasons are currently recorded on the system, and we have full data of each and every one of them. But we will, on the irregular expenditure submitted, did not report to the committee. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. There was a question on the number of seekers who seem not to know the learners that they have trained. I think in defense of the seekers, let me just explain where the problem comes from. I think the chair of the audit committee has tried to highlight the number of workplace learners that have been presented with opportunities. It was about 240,000+. And that figure was a raw figure that was given to the AG. But in the process, we have got our own standard operating procedure to look at the duplication. Now, the error happened on our side because of this manual calculation that some of the learners got kicked out accidentally, but it was already too late to rectify that. But how are we planning then to resolve that? We think that the new SECME system that is underway currently is going to assist. Because if then you have got more than 240 records that you are going to deal with manually, you are likely to make a mistake. So we just think that it's going to improve with time. Otherwise, the system we have started in the first quarter to get information electronically instead of manual capturing.
Thank you very much. I think there were two questions. The one was about the targets not achieved that may have been budgeted for, and specifically linked to the policies that we hadn't achieved. Just to indicate that the process around the policy development is really linked into our operational budgets. There is no very specific budget attached to those. The work that the research work has already been done, and that was paid for, but to finish off is about our own consultation and finalising the process. So there is no budget issue linked to that. And then the last one was a question about the criteria to recognise the missing middle. That process is still underway at the university level in terms of the work that's being done. The universities each had to go through a process of applications from students, and then on the basis of information provided, verify the family incomes of those students. And the universities are currently finalising their lists and providing them to us, and once we have all that data in, we will then really have a very good record in terms of how we go forward in relation to this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Was around the issue that colleges do not form part of the PFMA. Now, there are two things. I have heard that the department stipulated that they were making interventions in terms of policy to guide colleges, etc. But obviously, policy is a policy. It has no legal impact. So, is it not necessary to regulate through proper published regulations certain aspects, and specifically referring to putting the necessary accountability steps in place for principals of colleges, etc., to achieve this and that by that date. The second point is very concerned that they don't have to report about irregular expenditure, wasteful expenditure, and all of that. Why? Because they are not listed in Schedule 3 of the PFMA. Colleges. So what are we going to do to bring them into the fold to ensure that when the Auditor General investigates the financials of those colleges, they are in fact getting a comprehensive picture and that they report like all other entities. We cannot have a situation, Chair, where we're making progress or we're trying to make progress to keep public money
allocated to institutions and to make those institutions accountable for that, for the public money. But legally, they don't have to account. How can we throw money at the problem and not keep them accountable? Thank you.
For the universities, I think then we could not in that meeting get the answer on the college, because obviously the colleges were not there in terms of our agenda item. That's what the members are referring to, which arose again yesterday when they had the auditor general before.
Thank you.
And what the DG is whispering to you, if you can say that also, because I think it does help to clarify the thing completely.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair. I think what needs to be noted first is what does the PFMA say about higher institution education institutions? They exempted it as the PFMA. Section 47.4c of the PFMA stipulates that the minister may not list any institution of higher education in Schedule 3 of the PFMA. So that's where it starts. And if you then apply that, that's the reason why universities, as an example, is not subjected to the PFMA, neither are direct colleges. And I think we do appreciate your requirement for making certain components of this PFMA framework mandatory. I think it's a good thing to implement. The only way for us to take it forward would be to revise the CET Act, as an example. The CET Act is a governing act of direct colleges. That's where we start. And the CET Act, all that the CET Act says is internal audit and risk management may not be inferior to the PFMA, and that's stipulated in the CET Act. So we'll have to see if we must change the CET Act per se, but that's a long-term change. Short-term change is that the department already prescribes the reporting format for direct colleges. Now, they also apply GRAP, Generally Recognized Accounting Practice, for college accounting. But we can include, if that's the way we would like to go, we can make certain components mandatory for reporting, because the minister has the authority to instruct the reporting requirement, and that's also governed in the CET Act. So I think as a short-term intervention, we will then initiate a process for disclosure of fruitless and those irregular expenses that we can do. I think as a long-term vision, we need to see whether or not, I don't think it will be feasible at this stage to list them as public entities. That's another option, is to put, because there's cost implications, and so that will be difficult. But we might, in the long term, look at the change of the CET Act, or to issue some complementary governance framework as an addendum to the CET Act. But that is a long-term vision. I think short-term, we can definitely request disclosure of these items.
No, I think we have covered all the questions that have been asked. No, it was on this question. We're looking at the PMFA. Yes, and Zach answered that, when he was responding to the concerns of the honourable members on this matter. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, let's leave it there. I suggest that we thank the department, led by the DG and all the other officials for the presentations and the answers. We will see each other in the second quarterly report, where we will continue to discuss these and many of the other issues again on these matters. And everything else that you have promised us today, we will check it out in the second in the second quarterly report whether we have been able to reach that. But I want to ask honourable members, can we have lunch till 12:30 and then come back and we'll deal with the, is it too long? Must we go upstairs where we were yesterday? The first floor. Is it too long? Oh, okay. Yeah, let's go, honourable members, and have lunch. Enjoy the lunch. We'll have some 20-30 minutes of lunch.
Thank you.
project, is still a medical fonds, is still a medical fonds, engineering fonds, medical fonds, is still a debt, is still near the position of the personnel. In shelter, of course, but I don't find here to do the same one. So, you think that the fund, but this is your supply chain management procedure or source
capital. So, my thing also is good to explain that it is not far. Well, my father is not easy. Dat is een project manager van mij. 30.000 aanzoeken.
nog wel voor de vlucht op noemen.
Ja, ik heb het zo met heel erg gebruikt.
Thank you.
Honourable members, I think we have to do a bit of a marathon now.
Yes.
I'm going to ask that we have the report. Don't go into mission and vision, where you come from, where you have been, what now, and that's it. And then we ask the Tibet Council to quickly. So let's give you 10 minutes. Yes, you're going to create a miracle today. So that we give them an opportunity, because they also have a slight problem.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I've got limited time, but perhaps I need to indicate that we need to move towards reducing this extensive of the resources. Because as I said, this year, that's, and then what is eating one is the marching process, because it's got 22 marching. And then without any wisdom, let me get all. Hello?
Yeah. Without any waste of time, I just wanted to indicate that, and because the unprecedented of the system necessitate that we run the examination cycle with 9 elements from registration for the colleges, N1 to N6. This should have been done by the colleges, some of the levels. And we are proposing that some of the levels need to be internalized. And then, for example, I can give example N1 to N4 and N5, and maybe external examination be pitched at N3, N6, N level. It will reduce these huge exam system. Moving to certification, the department has worked closely with CETA and UMALUSI. As I indicated, that the DG has created a war room. We meet Monday morning every week to address data issues, because we want to make sure that there is congruency between the data that is contained in UMALUSI system, CETA, and ourselves. Because if there is incongruency, you know, the UMALUSI won't approve the data. And then as at September 2017, a total of 236,982 certificates have been processed and released to colleges. And then accordingly, for the period 2007 and 2016-03, all NCV candidates would have at least been issued with certificates. I think this was a bad lock. Yeah, the department I'm struggling a little bit. No, I think let me say that. Just start from the beginning quickly with the first slide. Okay? Did you move? Okay. No, I was using the arrow. As at September 2017, a total of 236,982 certificates have been processed and released to the colleges. So accordingly, for the period 2007 to 2016-03, all certificates would have been released to all the candidates. I think this has been a problem that we had of a backlog that has been accumulated since 2007. And then the department in collaborative with CIDA has commenced a NCV certificate backlog completeness test. This is a test over and above the clearing of the backlog to ensure that all the remaining backlog are flushed out. And then as at 11 September 2017, a total of 4,406 certificates have been identified with the same ID sequence numbers, meaning that after that test was run, we found that there is still a bit of backlog there, which is caused by issues of sequence numbers, issues of you know, somebody with same name but the identity is wrong, and CITA and the department worked very hard to align that information. And as of 26 September 2017, 1,343 records were aligned, and then and CITA and the department continue to update these records on a weekly basis. The department is also in the process of integrating IT system with Home Affairs. This is intended to eliminate this remaining backlog, which is a normal backlog when students, when they register, they don't register accurate names. When they register for another exam, you find that the names of the candidates are the same, the IDs are different, or rather, the names are not in the right order. So those are the issues that we are trying to address, and sometimes you may not be able to address it unless you get accurate information from Home Affairs. We must make sure that we certify the right candidate, and that sometimes it takes time. The department has also ensured that TVET college candidates who sat for the November 2016 supplementary examinations and were eligible for certificates received certificates. NCV 2016-11, as of 26 September 2017, a total of 818 records remain not certified due to data processing challenges. NCV 2017, which is supplementary, as of 26 September 2017, a total of 1,575 candidates remain not certified due to IT system processing problems, including consolidation and data errors. For NATED 2016-11 to 2017-04, the examination results were certified, but the consolidated certificates are yet to be issued. Consolidated certificates are certificates that students acquire over period. They may not achieve it in 1 year, but they may achieve it over 2 years. So the system has to consolidate the information. And sometimes we had problems because the sister system was unable to do that. But that has been fixed for NCV. And I think that it needs to be extended to NATED qualifications, because the information may not be accurate in terms of the certification rates unless otherwise we're able to consolidate those that have got passed, part of the subject, and those subjects need to be combined in order to create a certificate. And then a current 2017-06 to 2017-08 examinations were resulted and will be certified as per the departmental certification plan. All NATED and NCV certificates have been dispatched to examination centers and colleges, and colleges are expected to report any certification query to the department for any candidate who might not have received their certificate. Once substantial progress has been made in the certification backlog project for NCV, 3 months lead time for issue of certificates have not been achieved. We still struggle, we still take a bit of time beyond 3 months, possibly 6 months, but we are making progress. We're working hard with Umalusi and with CITA to make sure that we issue the certificate over a period of three months after the students have been resulted. In the past 6 months, the department in partnership with CITA has developed an electronic query system to facilitate the management of results, certificates, lecturer qualification exemptions, remarks, rechecks, and so on. There are a lot of queries that we are receiving the department that include the diplomas, and it's difficult to be able to provide quality service. But with this
query, which is piloted in 6 colleges, I think we'll be able to provide a better service, because students are not going to wait for months without knowing what is happening to their query. The query system will ensure that students are responded to as to what is happening and how long they'll be given the response or they'll be given the certificate. Since 15 September 2017, pages are now submitting their queries electronically in those colleges, and then there is communication, effective communication. There's no longer anxiety while people are complaining about the fact that they've been calling the department and there's no response. This time, there is a quick response from the system as to when are you going to submit this, receive your response. If it's going to Umalusi for processing, the system will indicate that you'll have to wait for 2 months for Umalusi to be able to clear this particular query. The system will be accessible to all TVET and private colleges across the country as per the departmental deployment plan. A total number of 20,475 national diploma and diploma applications were outstanding as at 28 February 2017. The department, in partnership with KCTO, processed 20,475 as at 30 June 2017. We had a lot of challenges, a lot of queries relating to the diploma. And then now that backlog has been cleared. And then of the total, 18,000 were issued and 2,000 were declined, meaning that in terms of the 20,475, 18,456 certificates have been issued, and not certificate, diplomas have been issued, and then 2,019 were declined. All national and diploma applications which were received up until 31st March 2017 were processed, distributed to examination centers by the end of June 2017. A total of 9,978 national and diploma applications have been received for the period starting from the 1st July 2017 to 22 September 2017. A total of 7,211 were issued and 1,563 were declined. So we are making progress now. We are beginning to function normally, you know, because we've dealt with the backlog. Accordingly, the backlog in processing of applications for the national diplomas has been eliminated. It is clear from the number of applications received from candidates doing their workplace experience learning that they do not necessarily qualify because they don't get exposed to the right environment, to the relevant workplace. And sometimes, even though they are attached to a tourist institution, they are not doing work that is related to their own qualification. For example here, making travel bookings for a manager does not constitute tourism. Changing bulbs at the municipal office does not constitute electrical engineering. You've got to demonstrate a sophisticated knowledge or epistemology of electrical engineering to be able to satisfy the requirements to be awarded a diploma. The national end diploma can only be issued to applicants who have exposure to the correct commerce or industry. The award of a national end diploma is not a right or foregone conclusion. Applicants have to meet the following workplace experiential requirements set out in policy. A minimum of 2 instructional offering on N6 level must be relevant to the candidate's vocation. Applicable experience in commerce and industry. That has its main function, the practical execution of the 2 N6 instructional offerings. It is the responsibility of the department of the examination body to ensure that the national N diploma is awarded to only those that meet the requirements. The assessment body must protect the credibility of the qualification, the credibility of the diploma. So it is necessary that those who are demonstrating practical experience, they do so in the right environment. The examination center, when they apply for N diploma, they will complete an application form, it will be locked, and then it will be submitted to the department for recommendation. And the department will lock the application for processing. But obviously, some of these things are not done well. The candidates are supposed to be given direction in terms of which suitable industry or business can they do, you know, their experience. And then they go to the wrong place to do experience, and then later on they the applications are allowed to go through to the department and they get rejected. As I indicated, that about 2,000 of them have been rejected. So we are developing a standard operating procedure to the colleges to so that we can train colleges, they can also train their exam officers in terms of the procedure to be followed, so that those students who are doing N4 and up to N6 who are about to complete, they can be an indication as to where they can do their own web-based experience, so that students should not face rejection, you know, at the point when they are desperate and they're looking for that diploma in order to find employment. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that report, and really big apologies for galloping like this. But I'm going to ask the pivot to also speak, and then we will combine together.
Thank you, Chair. We want to say the pivot is you responded exactly to the issue that was put before us by the committee. In 2015, National General Council of TBCTC will resolve to pay attention to college, to support colleges on the issues of the audit outcomes, because it was very clear that we are not doing well. The poor audits existed even though colleges are supported by SAICA CFO, who are chartered accountants. We then engaged the Auditor General to establish the depth of this problem of these poor audit outcomes. We had a meeting with the Auditor General where the Auditor General is raising awareness through provincial and national workshops regarding the audit outcomes. So the Auditor General is helping us in dealing with that particular issue. We have had three workshops. One workshop with the Auditor General was with the NEC of the TBCTC. The second was with colleges represented by chairpersons, chairpersons of councils, chairpersons of finance, audit and risk committee, principals of colleges, CFO, and the Department of Higher Education and Training. That was in 2016. And this year we have had the same workshop with all the parties. And you say we included SAICA as a professional body so that we also benefit from their understanding. The purpose of the workshop, Chair, is for the AG to present the findings to colleges and to present common trends and challenges, as well as to present best practices for colleges to learn from each other and to interact with AG and the colleges to interact with the AG and commit to prepare audit action plans. And this workshop assists the TBCTC to produce And this particular workshop also assists in ensuring that councils do their oversight and they understand their oversight responsibility on the implementation of the audit plan. So as we have these national workshops and provincial workshops, we are conscientizing councils to ensure that they pay attention to this function. We want to declare, Chair, that the slides that talk about annual audit exams and all others are from the AG. We will not deal with those. Those are the three areas that the AG is focusing on: fairness, reliability, and compliance. We will then go, Chair, to what the AG has said. The colleges that the AG has audited, and audited 50 of them. And the AG is clear that In terms of the findings, we have a long way to go as colleges in order to be at a satisfactory level. And we do want to say that we appreciate the intervention of the AG's office in working with us, because we can see some improvement from where we were. So the AG is helping us. I would just say that we are focusing on the following question. Oh, SAICA as well has come into the picture in terms of the commitment that they've made to improve the audit relationship at the steering committee level and to improve the audit and risk committee, as well as the internal audit and risk management at all colleges. This we welcome very well, much. Capacitating finance department at all colleges, improved audit plans, and those commitments by SAICA chair are giving us hope, because we'll be able to meet with SAICA and see how are we doing at that particular level. But our response as the TIBET CTC, we have then conducted capacity building program with partnership with a partnership with the CETA, the EDP CETA in 2016 and 2017, where nationally all colleges were invited and the majority of them participated. And in both the workshops were focusing on corporate governance, financial management to strengthen council oversight, because we would want to ensure that we turn the corner as soon as possible. We are doing the following as well in terms of dealing with the challenges as raised by the Auditor General. We have made it our program that every year we're going to have national and provincial workshops with all college councils and all stakeholders that are relevant to help us to turn the corner. And currently, we are coordinating submissions of individual college audit action plan to prepare consolidated the national audit action plan by the end of November. And we are also conducting a monitoring evaluation of college. We will conduct monitoring and evaluation of college audit plan on quarterly basis, so that we would then want to understand where are we in terms of the issues that have been raised by the AG. TBCTC will continue, we are going to meet with SAICA and the internal auditors to evaluate progress on the implementation of the action of the audit action plan. We have a meeting that we are arranging data not yet out with SAICA, where we will raise two issues. One issue they know, the first issue will be dealing with the regression which was raised of some colleges after the AG has taken over the auditing. And we need to understand the reasons why. Because if you look at the slide, the slide where the auditor, the college is audited by the AG, and the overall audit outcomes of TIBET colleges, you would then appreciate that when you look at that, when we were audited by private firms, that was the situation which was there. You had those who had clean audit and all of that. But when the AG started, we saw a different picture. And therefore, we would want to engage the AG so that we fully understand this, and then we can advise colleges on time. So that if there are issues that needs to be looked at and be dealt with, we do so. Even though we appreciate the improvement, but we would want to understand that particular regression. The other issue, Chair, that we will discuss with the AG is the issue of audit fees that are higher than the audit private firm. Now that we are audited by the AG, we're paying more than when we were audited by private firms. And that's the issue they know, Chair, because we raised in the workshop, and we said in the meeting we're going to have in the near future with the AG, we will raise this particular issue. We're raising this issue, Chair, because the AG has found that some colleges are not even a going concern, and therefore the question of fees is one issue that we need to deal with. We have our own challenges, Chair, in dealing with, in monitoring and evaluating as an organization, which we are not going to hide. One issue that we wanted to raise, Chair, is that council members are part-time members, and therefore, we only do this work on giving intervals whenever we are able to do the work. Our capacity in terms of human resources is very limited to carry out our mandate. That's another limitation we have. We also have insufficient financial resources to properly execute effectively monitoring of the audit action plan. Of course, the department up to now, Honorable Chair, has not given us resources, but it's because they say they don't have money. That's the problem. When we were dealing with this particular matter. The other issue that we are raising, which is the problem, the performance management of principals that lies with the DHT in terms of the Act, and we think it requires a legislative amendment. The lack of recognition of ourselves as civil citizens, a statutory body, results in limitation of authority and resources. We only persuade college council members or college councils. If the college council can say no, we are not cooperating, that would be the end of the story. There is no other thing we can do. So that is one of our serious limitations. Of course, another one, Chair, is underfunding and huge deficit resulting in a number of colleges declared by AG as non-going concerns. And it has made those colleges, some colleges, not to be able to pay the subscription because we leave all the subscription that we get from colleges. So the lesser the number of colleges paying, the lesser the mandate or the activities we can carry out. In conclusion, Chair, we would want to say we are committed to perform our role to support colleges and do advocacy and oversight over our own college councils. And we are committed to clean governance and clean audit as the, in the TVET sector. That's our presentation, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members.
Thank you. You may have mentioned it before I came in, and apologies for being late. But I just wondered how you decide who's on your audit committee, the quality of people on the audit committees and their experience, and whether any check exists as to the kinds of audit committees that you have. Because presumably that is your long-term investment in quality, is having very strict audit committees that know what they're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would first like to ask to the Governor's Council, when I was still more closely involved with the colleges, I found that from time to time the Minister or his office would write to the college CEOs and say, I need to appoint a number of people on the council of the college. Will you please forward a number of names to me? Then after a while, those people would be informed that they have been appointed to the college council, and that the college council was then invited to submit further names to eventually, you know, fill all the positions on the college council. Now, I have been concerned about this practice for quite a while, because what it boils down to is that the college principal is actually choosing his own council members, apart from the, you know, staff representatives, the student representatives, etc., on the college council. My question is that still the case? And what can we do to ensure that the relationship between the college council and that of the manager of the college is a little bit more distant, and that the roles are a little bit more clearly defined in this regard. The second thing is, I find it very interesting that the whole issue of a funding framework for the colleges which was recently published, has been, you know, I almost want to say ignored by your presentation. Because for me, from a stability point of view and going forward for our TVET colleges, this is almost the most important aspect, I would say. Because you need that framework, you need the formula to be able to do medium and long-term planning for your institution. What are your views? Have you already submitted your comments on this document? And what has been your response to the document that was recently published? And then, Chair, if I can move on to the certification backlog, I think we're all delighted to see that there has been huge progress in this regard. If I may start at the diploma level, Chair, I don't envy the department, and particularly that section in the department, their task to evaluate the practical that a student has done for the previous 18 months or more. When you have not been able to do any site visits or anything like that, it's just a desktop exercise. You must believe what is being presented to you on paper, whether that learner has, as it was put to us, changed bulbs, or whether that learner has done real electrical, let's say, construction work, etc. And my question is just, to what extent can we introduce a system whereby a learner that intends to apply for his or her diploma indicate beforehand that I am currently employed, I am doing my practical, and I'm doing it at this and this entity, and I hope to be able to build up the necessary experience and hours in this regard, so that there's at least some awareness from the department's point of view, and that it should be possible to go and just confirm that student is gainfully employed and employed in line with the requirements of the department. I can just imagine that once you've done your practical, to then discover that the changing of bulbs is deemed not sufficient, that can lead to high frustration levels with those students. And then lastly, on the certification backlog, it's wonderful the department, CETA, everybody has come a long way, and they must be commended on that. But I still read about IT problems. I still read about learn about a software that's giving problems and that's not suited. And that's not as if the requirements for those qualifications have changed at all over the last few months or years. So why is it still that people that have sat down for more than one assessment are not able to be, you know, combined or merged into one exam record for that? And then what is the current backlog? Because we are already, again, you know, sitting with the engineering students who wrote in April of this year. We're already sitting with the four to in six who have written in June of this year, and we're already, as far as I know, outside the 3-month period, you know, which was set as the standard for the issuing of those certificates. Have those learners received their certificates, the ones that have written in June? And why don't you report on those thousands, I presume, who again are behind in the receipt of their certificates? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions, which I think you can answer two things. On the certificates, I think maybe what we should do is, we have been talking to you for quite a long time now, and we have basically been talking about the backlog. I think we have to talk more than the backlog. because we will stay in the backlog syndrome all the time. And I think maybe what you should tell us is, moving forward, these are the things that you are starting to put in place for sustainability. Because we can't stay in the backlog all the time. What will it require? What are the key stumbling blocks? And how do we propose, how do you propose to overcome these key stumbling blocks? Remember, the target is 3 months. What is it that keeps you away from these 3 months? So that I think we then know this is where we are moving to. Because I would imagine, honourable members, you will agree with me, we can't talk backlog all the time. We've got to talk about certificates are being issued every 3 months. And that we can talk about these are the new kind of plans that have been devised. If the CIPA can help us with what is the outstanding IT problem story? Because in the previous discussion before lunch, all the data stuff that were mentioned, I take it they were all related to the CETA problem. And if you can help us with that one, I mean, do you still have? When I was in my previous life before the chair, I had nightmares with CETA. I mean, there was nothing functioning in that place. To the Tibet Council, we appreciate the efforts that you are making and that you are slowly but surely bringing a range of different things on board. But I think to the department, the part that we are worried about of the Tibet College is, if I'm correct, you're doing most of the things on a voluntary basis, and it's a strong word that I'm using. You're doing most of the things on a voluntary basis, because I think you are still complaining it's not a proper structure thing and so on. And that hampers you in having to get around the country. And maybe what we should suggest to you is that the Auditor General has pointed out there are some colleges who have moved up, there are others that were up that have regressed. And if maybe you can concentrate on those areas where stubbornly you see are not making any headway. So for example, in this presentation here, you've taken from the old ages. If you can speak to what plan are being put in place immediately for them. Remember, the audit year is in October already, so they would have been planned now already. We're not talking about, I mean, the budget year is how many months away to its end. So there should have been, there's supposed to be something in place now already on all of these aspects. So, but I think we must appreciate the efforts that are being made, and from outside we will continue to engage with you to ask what else is required to make sure. Because if the Tibets are not able to account for their money, this is just going to be an albatross. We must appreciate the certificates on the certificate issue. We appreciate the fact that you are now one unit and that you have been able to move together on the three of you taking the responsibility. And we think that helps quite a bit to move things forward. But as I said, we have to get out of backlog. We now need to talk about futuristic things. So if you can answer that very quickly, and then that is going to bring our meeting to a close.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I will take one question, which was around the published report by the Ministerial Task Team, that we did not speak to it today. It's because we responded directly to what we were said to be speaking about today, but because the question has been raised, we made two presentations to the task team, and some of the things that are in the report is what we said in that particular report. However, there are three issues that we have made our submissions on the 30th of September, just want to say one issue is the input versus output as a principle of funding going forward. We are worried about that because there is no national average on inputs for colleges as yet. This is a system in highly developed countries. And we are saying, let's investigate that particular principle, because the outcomes of colleges are very low. For example, they are around 30-40% at most. And if we are going to use that to fund colleges, it will be worse than where we are now. So that's one issue that we have flagged seriously. The other issue is the lowest cost that is used throughout the system. So they say, here is scientific results about the cost of a program. But then you must calculate that downwards because we are going to use the lowest cost. And we say that distorts the scientific or the real cost of the real cost of the program. The third and the last issue, Chair, because of time, I'm going to be saying is the full-time equivalent, because that is a combination. So, for an example, if you have three engineering students, because of the number of subjects they do a year, 12, 3:1. So, you have three, but only one funded. For economic management sciences, you have two, but one funded. The exception is NCV first year, where a headcount is used. And then we said in that response on Friday, which was the last day, that we would prefer a headcount because that is what colleges, or the cost incurred by colleges per student. And therefore, if we are called upon to further make presentations to the committee, we will avail ourselves. Let me give the two chairs to the other members. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. The issue of the appointment of council members. The status quo that we are talking about is no longer applicable, precisely because of the current legislations that we are working within. What is actually happening is that there are council members that are called external council members, as you were said, that principal give me the list. What is happening now, the minister is authorized to do that, will advertise nationally, and the people will apply to the department or to the ministry, and then the minister, after considering through the own criteria that is set, he will appoint those external council members. Those external council members will also appoint other members in terms of their different expertise. So that will be an institutional process that will be applied. But the same institutional process you apply, you advertise locally and nationally so that members can participate. How to improve the relationship between councils and management? We talked about this matter also yesterday in our Imbizo from Tuesday. And from our side, our view is that as long as there's no intensive and sustainable formal and customized capacity programs that assist to build those particular kind of relationships, then you will always have these particular conflicts in one way or the other. But the other issue that is interpreted as conflict, although it's not a conflict, is that council is responsible for college performance. And the principal is contracted through performance agreement to the HET. And that also created a crisis, because how do you consolidate the two at the end of the day? That's where the crisis is. But it's not necessarily a conflict. So that is why we are saying it's a matter of that we should relook at our legislation as to see whether how do we consolidate that particular relationship, because it starts there. So those are the two things that I just wanted to answer on the basis of the questions that was raised.
Thank you, Chairperson and the Honorable Portfolio Committee. Mine will be just to deal with the issue of the quality of audit committee members. The appointment of audit committee members are appointed from external through advertising by college council. So looking at expertise on finance, legal, and ICT. So those are purely appointed based on areas of expertise, and we seem to have no challenge in that regard. And then in response to what are we going to do with the current audit outcomes, basically our eyes also as a TVET Governance Council is to look at the worst case scenarios, the bottom line, those that are sitting at the adverse and the disclaimers, even the qualification boards. We are seeing a TVET sector, we want it to be a green sector with clean audits. So our focus will to focus on those, lifting them, those up that are having an adverse and what call a disclaimer and qualified opinion, because we have seen some have regressed, some were better, but they're getting worse. So we are actually in the process of coordinating the audit reports and audit action plans to see what are common problems and come up with a sort of a consolidated audit action plan, which comes with the recommended solutions for the common problems. I thank you.
Thank you, Chair and members. In terms of the certification backlog, I think in terms of the way we approach it now is more to have a holistic view and not to focus just on the backlog anymore. We look at the whole exam cycle and we look throughout the process whether there's any outstanding actions to be taken. One of the things that we've introduced to improve the measurement or the execution of the process is to bring about or to publish standard operating procedures that guide the process of how to be executed, but then to also pair that with job schedules that needs to be signed off and ensure that all the actions were taken that should have been taken. Another thing that we do is to actually move some of the checks quite earlier into the process, because initially it was done at the end when certification is done, which is a problem because the data is already in the system. Now, after enrollment, we will check the personal information of the candidates, make sure that that is signed off, and then right throughout the process, make sure that remarking has been done, irregularities has been set, and all those checks are done before we can get to the certification stage. And that then will improve that we can do the certification within the 3 months period that we want to strive for. In terms of the latter years, I think there's a lot of improvement, especially from on NCV on the 2016, 11 and 17 or 3 exam cycles. The cases that we're dealing now with are things that were introduced by the introduction of the sub-minimum requirements, and we're busy with the last processing of those candidates at this stage. Then in terms of the system issues that we currently struggle with, one of the challenges that we reported on was the consolidation function, and that has been largely eradicated in the NCV process, and we're taking now all those lessons learned and putting that into the native application side to make sure that all the programs are aligned to that. We implemented the first phase already last week, and we're now evaluating to see the process, how it's going forward in terms of that as well.
Yeah, I just want to add one aspect, which is making sure that our colleges comply with the submission of marks on time, because if they don't submit on time, they won't be resulted on time, it will affect certification. It also will affect records, because they have to be reconciled with these records. So that's what I want to...
On your last remark, really, which is very helpful, is to start telling us where, not now, where the problem areas are. Because then we know that the entire Mpumalanga is doing very well, but the Northern Cape is still giving you quite a bit. But the Western Cape is moving nowhere but how things seem to be. I think it will help so that we get a sense, instead of just talking blanketly, to start narrowing down What are the, I see the suggestion is making you smile.
Yeah, no.
Yes, I think we need to get to no more generalities. Let's get to specifics so that we narrow down and see where we are heading to that. And from the committee side, we will then see how do we respond to where the, those problems are so that no one is just hiding under. We're talking as if they are all okay. About the flow? You haven't answered that. Please do. I'm sure he can hear you.
Yeah. I think we're working closely with the two cities, the interfacilities to it, as I said, that they've given off to the evaluation instrument. And then they also produce log data. The employers are required to log into that book and monitor the practical experience. And then also to have that instrument that will be used to evaluate. So we take that instrument completed by the employer and the logbook to be able to evaluate whether the person is performing the relevant skills in the right environment.
May I take the opportunity, honourable members, to thank you very much for the 2 days. This is our meeting is has come to an end. May I take the opportunity again for thanking the department, all those in absentia, and the Pivot Council. Thank you very much for coming. We will continue to engage you, and likewise, you can must continue to engage us. Also, Umalusi, Sita, the Auditor General's Office, for remaining with us for the 2 days also. Everyone else who I have not mentioned that are here, thank you for your assistance and your support over the 2 days to assist us to have a successful meeting for the 2 days. You've heard us. As I said, we'll see you at the second quarterly report to see how we are doing and whether we are indeed living up to many of the things that we have said here. To the trio, we are not done with you. We're not done with you. As long as you talk backlog, we on your back on this one. Honourable members, I have no reason to keep you here any longer. Thank you very much.
I'm going to go to the next one. Thank you. Thank you so much.